The next case is 08-1396 and 1489, Broad Chiropractic versus American Family Insurance. Mr. McCarthy.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, Mr. Chief Justice.
Watch your time on the clock.
The right to contract freely with the expectation that the contract will endure is fundamental in Ohio. In this case, a healthcare provider and a patient freely contracted with the expectation that the patient would receive treatment and the healthcare provider would have an assurance of payment. The patient had a present existing right from which she could realize proceeds in the future. In exchange for treatment and to assure payment to the healthcare provider, the patient assigned a portion of those proceeds to the healthcare provider and which was consistent with a long-established law of equitable assignments in Ohio. More importantly, with notice of the assignment, the healthcare provider could enforce the right to the portion of the assigned proceeds directly against the obligor insurance company, who had agreed to pay those proceeds. The court should therefore affirm the propositions of law and answer the certified issues in the affirmative. Here, Your Honors, in Ohio, all rights in rem and in re, vested or contingent, possibilities coupled with an interest, and claims growing out of and adhering to property, both from contract and tort, may be assigned. This is a proposition of law which this court established in 1859.
Counsel, it's kind of interesting that all the cases cited at the appellate level, at least all the ones that I recall, involved the chiropractic industry. We didn't see any citing hospitals or other types of doctors or other entities. If we find that your process of seeking assignment is legitimate under all of the other considerations besides just the contract issues, because there's many more obviously here than contract issues, does that mean that hospitals can seek the same assignment, doctors can seek the same assignment, the car repair person can seek the same assignment?
First of all, let me address the point that you make about only chiropractors. There are a number of other cases that are used by other physicians, starting, for example, with Shue versus Parker. That was an orthopedic surgeon that took an assignment in that case. In re Petri, which is the Northern District of Ohio decision, was a Cleveland Metropolitan Hospital. So in answer to your question, first of all, that in Ohio, courts of appeals and the Northern District of Ohio in particular has recognized the validity of such an assignment in connection with orthopedic surgeons and hospitals. In addition, there are case law which we cited from other jurisdictions in which involve hospitals and other healthcare providers. So it is not a situation limited exclusively to chiropractors.
But they certainly seem to be the heaviest user of it.
There seems to be in the Court of Appeals cases that we cite, it is true that that is so.
Okay.
There are other reasons for that. For example, in Cincinnati, where I come from, the University of Cincinnati is a healthcare provider for a large portion of the uninsured and underinsured. They're required to take them. So in those instances, it's part of their eleemosynary obligation for the University of Cincinnati to provide such assistance. So there are other issues that arise in connection with that. Dealing with the last portion of your question, could this be then used by hospitals? Yes, and it has been used. Could it be done by other doctors? Yes, it could be used. So,
and physical therapists and auto dealers or auto repair shops. And so what happens then if you have an injury that's maximum value is $10,000, and you've got $30,000 of assignments this person has signed to try to get all of these repairs and medical treatment. What happens to those assignments? Is it the first one that filed gets the first divvy out of the money? Do they all take a pro rata? Where's the law for pro rata? There's a lot of issues that come out of ruling in your favor that affect have a major ripple effect on even the ability, as the other side maintains, to settle.
No, with due respect, let's deal first with the issue of the multiplicity of the claims. It is not uncommon in any personal injury case that a patient will have, for example, in an automobile accident, you will have a trip to the emergency room potentially. There is property damage to the automobile. There is then subsequent treatment after that. All of those damages are part of the tort claim. The claimant will have an obligation to pay for each one of the services provided, so that the patient in your hypothetical who has the personal injury claim of damages amounting to $30,000.
I don't have a problem with that issue. They have an obligation to pay them. That's between them and the provider. Where we run into the hitch is when all these assignments can go directly to the person that pays the claim, the insurance carrier. And how do they sort out who they owe first and what pro rata and, you know, who is first in time and all those issues?
The Court of Appeals for the 11th District, I think, answered that question. The answer is the insurance company has the ability to negotiate, without regard to the assignments, a settlement which they think is fair and reasonable. The patient can either accept or reject that proposed settlement offer. If there is, at that point in time, an assignment, the only obligation which the insurance company has is to put the name of the assignee on the check.
So your answer is that if there's 20 assignees, you put the victim's or the plaintiff's name on the check and the 20 assignees on the check, you give it to them and you say, we're done, our obligation's
done.
That's
correct. And why is that the correct answer? Because what that does is it puts that patient in control. The patient, and let's assume for purposes of this discussion, that the patient is not represented by counsel, that the claimant is simply doing this on his or her own, all right? The check is delivered to that claimant. The claimant now holds it. The claimant then is in the position to negotiate with each one of those creditors. I owe the chiropractor X number of dollars. I owe the emergency physician X number of dollars. I owe the hospital Y number of dollars. But this is how much I have. Let's negotiate an amount that's fair to you.
The assignee has no obligation to negotiate. They got an assignment. You got the check. You have an obligation to give me 100%. I have no duty to negotiate.
Right. But that doesn't involve the insurance company. It's the same situation with or without the assignment.
I understand but now we're looking at the interest of the plaintiff, and are we putting them in a huge box by allowing this process?
But in this process, what you are doing is you are allowing the claimant to enter into a contract knowing what, at the beginning, I agree with you, healthcare provider, I need services. I have an injured back. I have a sprained neck. I need services. I do not have insurance or I'm underinsured. Please provide me with the services. In turn, the chiropractic physician, the hospital, the doctor agrees. I'll agree to provide you services, but I need some assurance of payment. What can you give me as an assurance of payment? And that's where the assignment comes in. Because as I started to say, what you now have is the following. One, the insurance company is out of this debate about who should be paid what. Two, the claimant is in position of control to negotiate how much he or she will be paid.
Counsel, let me ask you right there, that is, I think, a problem I have, similar to Justice Stratton here. My understanding of this arrangement was that the money was not to be given to the plaintiff, but to be given directly to West Broad.
No. Part of the assignment says that you may pay directly. It doesn't necessarily require that it be paid directly.
So all you're arguing for then is a check to be cut to the plaintiff and all of these assignees.
Correct.
And not circumvent even the plaintiff with an insurance company check directly to
exactly.
the assignee.
That's exactly right.
Well, counsel, what?
Because,
the, it,
and let me,
go ahead.
Sorry, Mr. Chief Justice.
No, finish your answer to her, and then I'll ask mine.
Let me finish the other point I was trying to make here. The other value that the assignment gives is that the healthcare provider now has some assurance that he or she will receive some payment. In each one of the cases that we've brought before you, what you have is no payment at all. The chiropractor, the healthcare provider, is given nothing. And with the assignment process, what the point I'm trying to make here is, each party gets their interest protected. The insurance company recognizes the assignment by putting the name on the check. The patient has control to negotiate. And at least the healthcare provider has some assurance, I'll get some money out of this.
That's not a concern of the insurance provider, is it?
It shouldn't be. All the insurance company has to do when they receive notice of the assignment, I now have an obligation to recognize this assignment. You can recognize the assignment by simply putting the name of the assignee on the check.
This assignment, I just want to check your statement that this was a sort of a permissive assignment, but the last sentence says you are of the bold language says you are directed herein to pay, meaning the insurance company, you are directed herein to pay West Broad Chiropractic directly the amount outstanding before making any payments to me.
Right.
That sounds like it's a command to pay your client before.
The importance of that language is consistent with Ohio law. What the assignor is doing in that instance is giving specific instruction. I am making a specific assignment of a portion of these proceeds, and you are to pay this person that portion of the proceeds. So it is, in that sense, it's necessary to be consistent with the case law in Ohio that there needs to be a specific assignment of a designated amount from a specific source. And so in that sense, it's mandatory because that's what an assignment requires. But what the Court of Appeals in Gleckler clearly stated, that an obligation to recognize such an assignment can be satisfied by simply adding the name of the assignee to the check. That will satisfy
that obligation. Which wasn't done here, obviously. The check was sent to the patient, the plaintiff, and
correct.
She took the check and never paid you.
Never paid anything.
I guess shows the value of such an assignment.
Exactly. And that's the point, Mr. Chief Justice, is what we're trying to do here is set up a system in which the patient has some control, but at the same time, there is this ability to assure the doctor that you're going to receive some type of payment.
Let me take you to your reply brief and your reply rebuttal time here. As you know, the company argues that these assignments dampen or discourage settlement, and you responded to that in your reply brief. I'd like to hear your strongest argument on why settlement efforts are not affected by, that is, settlement between the plaintiff, the purported plaintiff, and the tortfeasor. Why is there not a dampening of that process?
Well, let me walk you through a typical example here. In the case of a personal injury automobile accident, there are multiple components of the damages. The insurance company has the ability, independent of the assignment, to assess each one of those components. They will assess, all right, you paid $1,000 for repair of your automobile. I'm only going to pay you $750. I don't think it was necessary to pay all of that. You have $3,000 in medical bills. I'll pay you for the hospital, but I don't think it's necessary to pay you all of the charges for the chiropractor. You have pain and suffering of 2x medicals. I'm going to pay you 1x medicals, and I'll pay you nothing more. That assessment is made independent of the assignment. The patient and his or her lawyer then can either accept that offer or reject that offer. It doesn't require the insurance company to guarantee payment, a total amount of the doctor bill. It doesn't require the insurance company to pay 100% of the damage to the automobile. That simply is an independent assessment which the insurance company can make regardless of the assignment, and therefore can make an independent offer of settlement. The patient, the claimant, and or his or her lawyer is then in a position to say, I accept or I reject. If they accept, and again, I quote the Gleckler court, if the offer is made of $100,000, $2,000, $3,000 is paid to the doctor, or a check is issued for $100,000 with both names on it, and that's the satisfaction of the requirement for the assignment. The assignment does not interfere with the ability of the insurance company to decide independently and for itself how much it will pay to settle a case.
Counsel, the recourse in the event that we don't recognize this assignation as being binding on the insurer is for you or your client to seek recovery in the court from the plaintiff, correct?
Correct.
And this assignment then becomes an exhibit of obligation, acknowledgement.
In our opinion, it's a valid assignment.
Well, the document that you had executed would simply be produced and saying the plaintiff agrees that they owe us, you know, this money. They
Correct.
Even signed an assignment.
Right. Okay. Right. But also the carrying that point forward one more step, and I think this is what the Court of Appeals in the First Appellate District said, what this does, if you don't recognize the assignment, is it creates more litigation. Now what we have to do is we now have to file suit against our patient. And maybe we'd have to file suit before the settlement or before there was ever any kind of resolution. Let's just look at the timetable in this case, if we can. The assignment is made in 2002. The notice is given in April of 2004. The case is settled in January of 06, all right? So here's my point. Then are we, as the chiropractor, then forced to file suit in, for example, 2005 against our patient, get a judgment, you owe us $3,000, and then attach the proceeds? Because the proceeds of that settlement can be attached under the Ohio Revised Code. So we end up in the same place as we are with the assignment, but with more litigation imposed on the courts. And that's what the point of the Court of Appeals in the First Appellate District was. What we were trying to do here is avoid all that litigation, give some assurance that there is, in fact, payment to the doctor, as well as recognize that once the insurance company puts that name, the name of the assignee on the check, their obligation to recognize and honor that assignment is completed. And with that, I'll reserve whatever amount of time I do have left, Mr. Chief Justice.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. Mr. Maddox.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, West Broad Chiropractic is asking you to rewrite the fundamental principles of Ohio law to help chiropractors collect their fees. In advancing this argument, they attempt to make a distinction that what is involved in this case is not the assignment of a personal injury claim, but simply the assignment of some unstated portion of proceeds from a hypothetical future possible judgment or settlement. And that concession is important for two reasons. Number one, they're implicitly admitting that Ohio law does not allow the assignment of personal injury claims. That's why they're trying to make this distinction. And number two, it's important because at the time of the assignment, Ms. Norgaard did not have a direct or contingent right to any settlement proceeds.
But she had an interest, didn't she? And she was injured.
She had
an interest in, she may file a suit sometime against
the
tort
fees. She had a cause of action, which if it were not a personal injury tort claim, could be assigned. And all of the cases that were cited by the appellant talk about the assignment of causes of action, not assignment of proceeds from a cause of action, and certainly not assignment of proceeds from a personal injury.
Well, she didn't really assign her cause of action here, did she?
She did not. Well, she did. That's the distinction they're trying to make, but it's a distinction without a difference. And that's the exact determination that the Indiana Supreme Court made in the Midtown Chiropractic case, that there is no value to a personal injury claim beyond the proceeds. And ultimately, what you're going to do is convert it into proceeds, and that's where the value lies. So if you're, assigning the proceeds, you're in essence assigning the personal injury claim,
but
that's not permitted.
Is there not a difference in who controls the action? She didn't turn over to West Broad the right to sue for her or to have any control over her negotiations and so forth, did she? She retained all that under the assignment.
And counsel points out in their brief that there's no express veto power over the settlement, but there is, in essence and in effect, a veto power, particularly in the smaller cases or the questionable liability cases where the amount of money that's being offered is insufficient to cover both the chiropractor lien and any money for the lawyer and any money for the victim. So yes, it does have a preclusive effect. It does discourage settlement of particularly smaller claims and those of questionable liability. And
but don't you have that situation in any case in which the settlement proceeds are not going to be enough to pay all of the creditors of the claimant, whether you have an assignment or not? I mean, you still have that same issue. Well, I can't settle for this amount because I'm not going to pay all my creditors.
Well,
so whether you have an assignment or not, it's the same issue, isn't
it? The patient knows that he or she is still going to owe the medical provider regardless of the amount received in the settlement. That's correct. But the patient also knows that the settlement provider isn't going to come in and scoop up the entire amount of the settlement without the victim getting a dime. And so what that does is encourage a victim to let's go and try this case and try to get a bigger verdict so I can get some money out of this thing. And that's why this assignment is invalid under Ohio law, because it promotes litigation and discourages compromise.
Counsel, in general assignment law is, let's take out the insurance involvement and all. Can you satisfy your obligation when you get a notice of assignment by writing a joint check in general assignment law?
I don't know, Your Honor. I believe you probably could. You'd have to know the amount. I guess in that situation, you wouldn't need to know the amount. You could probably do that. In this case, though, the assignment that West Broad advocates purports to require American Family to issue a separate check to the chiropractor. In kindness, in this case, say, well, we're not requiring that. But if you look at the strict terms of their contract, that's what it says. It says we can require a separate check payable to us and not to the insured. And in this case, for instance, the assignment was of an unstated amount. How much is the assignment? We don't know.
Counsel, an assignment is not used in place of a judgment, correct?
That's correct. In the place of a judgment, no.
I mean, they could not have executed on this assignment against your company or a pot of money someplace or even the proceeds.
That's right, because the proceeds never existed in our hands. When the proceeds of the settlement came into existence, they were in the hands of Ms. Norgaard. And that's what this court found in Pennsylvania versus Thatcher in 1908, citing a New Jersey case.
But even to access those proceeds, say she had put them in a bank someplace, they still would have to do something in addition to this document of assignation.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're going to have to get judgment against her and then attach the funds wherever they reside.
Mr. Maddox, if we could go to the hypothetical that your opponent had just mentioned about names on the check, and you have a settlement, you have a personal injury case, and let's say there's a chiropractic assignment, an assignment from the repair shop with the, you know, with the money for the car, just hypothetically, and then another doctor. So let's say we have three assignments. If this were to work, according to your opponent, it sounds like the insurance company could settle the case for $15,000, let's say, and write a check of $15,000 to the plaintiff and to the three other parties. What would happen then? I mean, what do you see a downside from your client's point of view?
Well, the downside is that the settlement probably wouldn't take place in the first place because of the nature of the assignment and the tort victim knowing all the money is going to go to the assignees and not to them. But as far as American Family would be concerned, No, they paid the money, they've got the release, they're off the hook. And under the assignment in this case, though, they could be required to write separate checks, which would pose a problem, particularly because the amount of the assignment in this case was unknown and unstated.
Counsel, if we create an obligation here for this assignment to be honored by your company, would it then be logical to require a sign-off by the assignees to the settlement? You know, if you're going to be required to cut a check to the chiropractor in this, are you not going to want some kind of release from the chiropractor?
Well, absolutely, and if the case is in litigation, we're going to join the chiropractor and the auto body repair guy and anybody else who's got an assignment to the case for that very reason, that we want them to be bound by whatever happens in the case. So yes, we would want them to sign off on another release or add their name to the existing release.
So the litigation does become more complex then?
Absolutely becomes more complex.
Right. That was my question, how this really affects reality if we were to accept your opponent's position.
Right. Well, I guess it depends on what stage are we at. Are we in the pre-suit negotiation stage or are we in suit? Because obviously that's going to have an impact on how it complicates the matter. It complicates the matter even further if it's in suit because we have to join them now. As far as the underlying, if it's just a pre-suit negotiation, you could simply add their names, I guess, to the release. Mm-hmm. But again, you're going to have to circulate it and get everybody to sign it, and that complicates matters.
Mr. Maddox, the record seems to indicate that American Family received a notice of this assignment but chose instead to make full payment of all of the money to the claimant. Why should your company not have some obligation to recognize an assignment or to get some resolution of it prior to issuing a check when it has received an acknowledged notice of the assignment of the proceeds signed by the claimant?
Well, because, number one, I don't think there was a conscious decision to choose to ignore it. I think it got lost somewhere in the shovel, and I can assure you that if American Family could have added their name to the check rather than be here in the Supreme Court today, they would have done that.
We're very happy to have you here, though, Mr. Maddox.
Practical matter, it's unfair to require American Family to have to deal with this in the first place because what they're trying to do is protect their insured. They have a contractual right to their insured to resolve this potential tort claim against them. And to require them now to deal with these third parties who have a potential to influence the resolution of the case is unfair and against public policy.
But the question would be whether or not an individual claimant can assign proceeds from a claim.
Well,
in the first instance.
That's right, and they can't because they don't have a direct or contingent right to settlement proceeds at that point of the game. It's a mere possibility which can't be assigned.
It's only after the amount of the settlement has been negotiated between, say, for example, your insured American Family, and the amount, say, for example, $15,000 has been suggested, at that point the assignment can be made.
Well, I would argue it cannot for the same reasons that it's still an assignment of a personal injury claim. It still violates Ohio public policy, but at that point, it becomes a little easier to deal with. I mean, obviously, proceeds once received by the tort victim can be assigned, and you know, the chiropractor has some assurance of payment in that respect. But the chiropractor, when he takes this assignment, doesn't have any assurance of any payment because he doesn't. This is a tort claim that isn't filed. He doesn't know the merits of the tort claim at all.
So we're getting into issues of either champerty or maintenance, for example.
He's speculating on this tort claim is going to pay off for him down the road. That's all he's doing. He's a creditor with a better guarantee of payment.
Well, he's trying to prevent what happened in this case, isn't he?
Well, he is trying to prevent what's happened in this case, but the way to do that is to sue the patient who owes you the money.
Patient got the money and didn't pay the chiropractor, and that's the problem.
That's right, and it's the problem between the chiropractor and the patient, not a problem between the chiropractor and the insurance company for a third party who's trying to resolve tort claims and avoid litigation. You know, one of the cases
this
cited.
Litigation, and this litigation could have been avoided if it had just noticed the assignment in the record and found out what the amount was and paid it, and then we wouldn't have any litigation.
Well, they would have included them on the check. It would have been an improper, but a way to avoid being here. That's right.
Let me ask you a question. Let's take out for a moment the fact that we have a third party involved in this, and let's say that that your insured was involved in an accident and they incurred these bills and there was no assignment, and maybe the tortfeasor was uninsured, so they come and they get these services and they haven't paid for them because they don't have the money, and so they show you the medical bill and you find those to be legitimate, and they said, now would you write a check to each one of these and then write the balance to me? Would your company, as a matter of practice, agree and abide by that wish?
I don't know, Your Honor. I have represented this company for I think 15 years, and I've never known them to do that. But honestly, I don't think that particular question has ever come up.
All right, at least it's not in the record anyway.
Yeah. If you have a case, and the settlement value is $3,000, and you've got assignments that your company's received totaling $12,000, what is the motivation to settle it at all? What, you, the plaintiff, walk away, and you walk away, and be done with it? Because the plaintiff's not going to get a dime of that with those assignments out there. What motivation is there to even settle it on behalf of the victim?
There is none. The incentive is to let's go try the case, let's go roll the dice, and maybe a jury goes crazy and I get, you know, $20,000 and I can pay them and get money in my own pocket.
Or if they are told by their attorney there's not any value, much value to this, not even sue, but walk away, and then then the chiropractor has nothing to go after.
And that's why, you know, this assignment is no assurance of payment of any sort, because when the chiropractor takes the assignment, it's at the very first visit when the patient comes in the door and they know nothing about the case and nothing about the ensuing litigation and no ability to gauge whether this is a valid tort claim or not.
You don't read the assignment as requiring that the company has to pay the total bill that the chiropractor submits to the company, do you?
Yes, I do read this particular assignment because it says we can require a separate check to West Broad Chiropractic, suppose the settlement is $3,000 and the chiropractor bill is $4,000, we would have to pay the entire $3,000.
But why doesn't the company retain the right, as it would without an assignment, to determine whether how much of that bill should be paid?
Well, that's why I use that hypothetical. If we determine, you know, there's a $4,000 bill, and we think $2,000 of the bill are reasonable, and so we're going to settle for $3,000, we got to pay under that assignment, we got to pay the whole $3,000 to the chiropractor.
But with no assignment, if you determine $3,000 is the amount due, you pay that to somebody anyway.
We pay that to the tort victim, and we take our release, and off we go.
How then are you affected? I mean, how is the settlement process detrimentally affected by that?
Because the tort victim won't take the $3,000 to settle $3,000 to settle a case if they know it's all going to go to the chiropractor. What incentive is there to do that?
I'm seeing the chiropractor's bill as one of several that the company is with the company.
It could be the same scenario. It's just larger. I mean, the tort victim is not going to settle the case if he knows all the money's going to go to pay the assignees. What incentive is there for the tort victim to take that money?
Well, the incentive is to get a pot of money and try and negotiate with the creditors to take X amount of pennies on the dollar and then close out that obligation.
And that's certainly what happens in the normal course where there's not an assignment. The money's paid and they go, but they do that in advance. And chiropractors are going to be less inclined to accept less if they've got a guarantee, hey, I've got an absolute right to get my money back from this settlement, the money I expended in treatment from this settlement. There's no reason for them to negotiate at that point. Whereas now they've got an incentive because they know the juries frequently, particularly as the chiropractors, don't award all the chiropractic expenses. And so what they're trying to do is they know it's going to get written off by the jury, they want to guarantee it for themselves via this assignment, even if it means they got to stick their hand into the victim's pocket and take, you know, money that would be otherwise paid for general damages to the victim.
And you're reading this particular assignment as saying just that, that the chiropractor has priority over the patient in any payment.
Absolutely, it says that. And it says we have to provide a separate draft directly paying West Broad Chiropractic if they require us to do that. under this assignment.
Thank you, Mr. Maddox.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. McCarthy, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Let me do this very quickly. First of all, let me answer the question is to notice the affidavit of Dwayne Jones was filed in this case. American Family did not acknowledge any assignment.
Pardon me, I didn't hear you, sir.
The affidavit of Dwayne Jones, which was the adjuster for this insurance company, you asked the question, why didn't you recognize it?
I remember.
And he says in his affidavit, American Family did not acknowledge the assignment from Westbard Chiropractic and did not enter into any agreement with Westbard Chiropractic. There's no evidence that this was lost. This was a deliberate disregard of an assignment. This is not an assignment that leads to champerty or maintenance. At the time of the cause of action, there was an existing right. That right would be could be turned into proceeds.
And the existing right was what?
The cause of action.
A cause of action.
A cause of action, which so, this court, Mr. Justice Pfeiffer, I believe, you said in your concurring opinion in Pilkington, that's a chosen action, which is a property right, which is fully alienable.
So your view is that we can assign a cause of action.
You can assign proceeds from a cause of action.
But if the proceeds are not in existence, are they assignable?
Yes. That's what this court held in the Judkins case. A contract was in existence. Proceeds were going to be paid as the contract was performed. The proceeds could be assigned.
But Mr. Maddox would argue that the proceeds don't come into existence until the point of settlement when the carrier says, we will now resolve this claim for X number of dollars, and then here the proceeds come into existence. Other than that, it's an expectancy.
Correct. And an expectancy is fully assignable under Ohio law.
All right.
In that example I was giving you, the proceeds from the performance of the contract don't come into existence until the contract is performed. But yet, this court allowed an assignment of those proceeds, and more importantly, the court didn't say that that was an assignment of the contract itself. It simply recognized it's an assignment of the proceeds from that contract.
But Mr. McCarthy, the assignment of proceeds of a contract is different than the personal injury. A contract is agreed to, and you can argue that everybody knows X amount of dollars is here. In a personal injury cause of action, in many cases, there are disputes as to underlying liability. So how can you equate the two?
Well, you can use other examples of where this court has recognized an assignment of proceeds. For example, income generated from a trust or the potential for an inheritance. This court has recognized in both instances, such potential proceeds can be made and will take effect when the money comes into existence.
But they're less contingent than the personal injury cause of action.
With due respect, I don't think, for example, income from a trust, you could, in this economic time, you could even potentially say that you could guarantee me I know how much I'm going to get from my investment or how much I'm going to receive from my inheritance. Both in two cases in which this court recognized that such proceeds can be assigned. But the point is, and we go back to what this court has originally established as the law of equitable assignments, potential existence of proceeds arising from a source can be assigned. And that's the point. And when we gave notice, we provided evidence of the amount of chiropractic treatment that we provided. And as it says in the complaint, we provided $3,000 worth of chiropractic treatment. They knew it. They knew the amount that we were asking to be paid. And we were simply asking for the insurance company to put our name on the check and at least recognize that there was a valid existing assignment. We asked for nothing more. We could not bring a direct action against the insurance company until they committed. But once they committed to paying that money, that then became a property right, which we had a right to have honored, and that's what the insurance company should have done.
So a $3,000 settlement goes 100% to you under your scenario?
What I'm suggesting is what the insurance company could have done is simply put both names on the check, and then you empower the claimant to say to those creditors, all right, let's sit down and let's figure out how we're going to distribute the money we have left. What the assignment does, and what Mr. Chief Justice has acknowledged, what this assignment does is allows for the doctor to have some assurance, I'm going to get paid something out of this.
Well, counsel, if they would have cut the check directly to the chiropractic business as the agreement states, and it was a $3,000 settlement, and that check went directly, would you then give it back so it could be divvied up amongst the other creditors?
No. We're not. But isn't that the situation you'd find in any kind of personal injury case? If you choose, for example, let's just say there is no assignment. The check is cut to you. You choose to give it to one creditor and not the others. Does that mean you don't have an obligation to pay your other creditors? Of course you do. If you choose to pay off one because I want to make sure I continue to receive chiropractic treatment, maybe you as the claimant have decided for yourself, I want to make sure this healthcare provider is taken care of because I'm going to continue to need those services. But that's a contract you created yourself. It's the freedom of contract between the parties, the patient and the chiropractor, to decide, how's this money going to be paid? How are you going to pay me for the services? Does that mean the chiropractor didn't provide the services? Of course he did. Does that mean the patient doesn't recognize that obligation? Of course it does. My point is, in every personal injury case, there is that potential that the amount of money which the insurance company is going to pay you is not enough to pay for all the creditors. And all the assignment does is it provides the assurance to the healthcare providers who obtain that assignment that are going to get some payment out of this process.
Mr. McCarthy, let me ask you, the placing of the assignor's name on the check, making it a joint check, seems like a neat resolution, except that your contract says you are directed herein to pay West Broad Chiropractic directly the amount outstanding before making any payments to me. And that's the assignor, of course, saying that. Wouldn't that violate that provision?
No, I don't think so at all. Because I think what you can, because I don't believe that this is, and what we're talking about here, Mr. Chief Justice, is how does the insurance company, the obligor, recognize and honor an assignment? And what I'm suggesting to you and what the case law is saying to this court is that recognition and honoring of an assignment can be made by adding the name of the assignee to the check. It then falls to a dispute and falls to both the claimant and the assignee then to decide how is this money going to be distributed. It may be that the chiropractor says, I want to be paid in full.
But the payment is going to me, the person the assignor, isn't it? If it's a joint check, she could say, I don't think this is enough. I'm not going to sign that. I'm not going to endorse the check.
Right. But when she receives that check, you would agree that there is a settlement. You would agree that the insurance company has now realized a settlement of the claims, and they have now satisfied their obligations by the issuance of that check.
If she signs a release, then there's a settlement.
And that's what happens. They're not going to cut you the check. I assure you, Mr.
Chief
Justice,
your client
the insurance company will not release that check until they get that assignment or get that signature
for sure.
on the
but
release.
I would think your client would not be happy with having a check sent to them, the chiropractic West Broad, with her name on it.
Maybe that's irrelevant here, but either way, it could be sent to us with her name on it. What it does is it, first of all, recognizes the assignment. It satisfies their obligation to recognize and honor the assignment. Two, it does give, if that's what the concern here is, if the insurance company is really concerned, well, wait a minute, this says to pay the chiropractor. Well, okay, I'll send the check to the chiropractor, but I'm going to put the name of the individual on the check. That then puts the chiropractor in a position to have to contact the claimant and said, we received a check, $3,000, your name is on it. We're going to ask you to endorse it and over to us. That then puts the concerns that the court seems to be raising, puts the claimant in the position then to control how much is going to be distributed. Because without an endorsement from that other party, whether it's the chiropractor or whether it's the patient, the claimant, there's not, that check is not going to get negotiated, and no one's going to get any money. So it fosters an ability to try to resolve that matter between the chiropractor and the claimant.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.